Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
New Jersey Makeover Toolkit Edition. Good morning, everyone. Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Thanks a lot for listening today. The next big step for Governor Christie's makeover of New Jersey's finances is getting the Democratic legislature to pass a series of what he calls toolkit laws. Those of you in New Jersey have certainly been hearing this word. Each tool would allow local governments to get around existing employment rules, among other things. We're talking property tax caps, limiting salary hikes for police and firemen, major health care and pension reform. And this is not just a New Jersey story, because incoming governor of New York, Andrew Cuomo, is watching. States around the country are watching this Chris Christie model emerge, including the toolkits. Our own WNYC's Bob Henley has been following this, and he joins us now. Hi, Bob.
Hi.
And New Jersey listeners, call in on the toolkit, how this is affecting your locality, your town, your city, your county. Toolkit good, toolkit bad. Give us a call on any of this. 212-433-WNYC. Again, this is, I think, Chris Christie kind of setting an example for governors around the country, and people are watching closely for what works and what doesn't work in this emerging model. People in New Jersey, especially right now, 212-433-WNYC, are you taking a position on the toolkit legislation? How do you think it's going to affect you and your neighborhoods? 212-433-9692. Bob, do we need to define toolkit anymore?
I think first we also need to give due credit to Democratic Senate President Steve Sweeney and Assembly Speaker Sheila Oliver, because what's happened here, what's different, is that these Democratic leaders are serious about reform and are working with the governor. It's a little messy. There's finger pointing back and forth, a couple of bad news cycles, but in essence, this arbitration reform could not have happened without them being very much part of this process.
Arbitration reform being?
Right. Well, basically for years, you had a situation where police and local fire departments, and particularly the police, we saw this, they would go into arbitration. Why do they have arbitration? They have binding arbitration because they can't strike. So the law, labor law, balances it out that they go into arbitration. Arbitrators would come in and just basically look at, you know, the police could say we're interested in 8% and the town could say zero. The arbitrator comes in and averages the two and comes up with something that's often higher than the rate of inflation. Arbitrators didn't even have to get this, Brian, didn't even have to take into account the fiscal condition of the municipality when they came up with an award. So now, and in fairness to many police unions, they have tried to meet the municipalities on their own. Now they'll be held to a 2% cap in terms of salary hikes over the next 3 years, and arbitrators can't take forever and a day to get it done.
And for local governments, the passing of these toolkit laws is rather urgent because of the 2% property tax rate cap. Increase cap that comes into effect on January 1st.
Exactly right. And that was something that also the same combination bipartisan leadership came together and put this cap on municipalities. Now, there are a couple of exemptions here that are big ticket ones. You are exempted when it comes to things like health care costs, which are believed to go up double digit for public employees. And so you also have pension costs that are exempted and debt service. So those are
cost
drivers.
Wait, time out.
Yes.
Aren't those the big three drivers of increasing property taxes, health, pension, and debt?
Yes. And also salary increases historically and legacy issues around operational costs. But here, and this is the part that the governor is going to take up along with the Senate Democratic leadership in January, which is a question of getting their arms around the health care costs for public employees. I mean, one of the things people have to understand is historically, local governments, state governments didn't have to carry on their balance sheet the cost that was attached to retiree health care costs. So that all of a sudden now has to be, because of the change accounting standards, is on the balance sheet. So now they have to make people accountable and these systems accountable for these costs.
And here's another reason for New Jersey homeowners not to get too excited about this 2% increase cap. The Senate President Steve Sweeney, who you mentioned, said yesterday that despite the cap, businesses and homeowners can expect increases greater than 2% unless the economy improves dramatically. So a statement like that and the exemptions that you just listed leaves me wondering, is this cap meaningful at all?
Well, it's a throttle, and it causes a moment of accountability. And so they will not be as high as they would have been. The other thing to keep in mind here is that we are seeing the kind of softening of the public balance sheet in the form that property taxes have been going, property values have been going down in many areas. And so property taxes are based on what? Property values. So people have been appealing their property taxes and winning these appeals. There's also a sense that there's a revenue crunch at the municipal level, because if you're on a fixed income and you have a choice between paying your mortgage or paying your property tax, you're going to pay that mortgage first, Brian, and you'll leave that property tax to some other day because it takes so long for them to take that property back.
And then Wall Street can come up with derivatives so people can invest in the liens.
Right, exactly.
But that's another story. So hand me the most important tool in the toolkit box. What is it?
I think it's probably going to have to be the pension reform question, because historically what happened in New Jersey is that the pensions were increased and the state basically did not keep pace and did not make its contributions into that pension system. And this actually became something that resulted in, as we talked about this last time, the Securities Exchange Commission back in August issued an unprecedented cease and desist order against the state of New Jersey for materially, and that's a quote, misrepresenting from 2001 to 2007 how much money they set aside in these pensions. So now there is a $46 billion hole in these pensions, and it's going to get worse.
In fact, here is a clip of Governor Christie talking about New Jersey's dire pension situation last week at a town hall meeting in Livingston.
An independent study just came out that said that New Jersey is one of 11 states that that pension system could be bankrupt by 2020. That's 9 years from now.
Exactly. And the thing here is that they take, for instance, police officers. To their credit, they have been making an 8% contribution right along, but the state has not been matching it. There was also, during the Christie-Todd administration, they decided to try to speculate a bit with the principal and borrow against the pension. So historically, both administrations, both Democrat and Republican administrations, have had a problem with. In fact, both Senate President Sweeney and Governor Christie point to one decision in 2001 where a Republican legislature and Governor DeFrancesco, an acting Republican governor, approved a 9% hike in public pensions with no way of paying for it. Both want to roll it back.
Amazing. And I'm just going to back up for a second and go back to something else that you said, because it went by kind of fast, but it's almost unbelievable, that in arbitration between localities and public employee unions, the arbitrators are not allowed to take into account the financial health of the local government?
Historically, that was the case. This law changes that. It also means that arbitrators used to go on for months at a time, now have to get the job done in 45 days. And here's the bad news, Brian. They're capped at only $1,000 a day. Could they struggle by on that? Because here's the problem. This is where it really would bite municipalities in the backside. What happens is the arbitration goes on forever, and they come up with a number. Then there's the retro payment that has to be made to make right, and so all of a sudden, this is serious. Millions of dollars have to be paid up for retro payments because the negotiation wasn't efficiently done.
New Jersey listeners, what do you think about the toolkit? Good, bad, mixed questions, so that you can understand this better. With this all emerging from Trenton now, WNYC's Bob Henley here, 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. And Billy in New Brunswick, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Thank you.
You know, the toolkit, I think you have to give credit to the state and to the governor. They're really trying to deal with an almost impossible situation. But this is only, you know, salt in the injury for us taxpayers. Remember that we've been living, you know, what Spain and Greece and Europe and all the things that you hear, we've been living that already for 2 years at the local government. You have places like in my town in Perth Amboy where out of seven inspectors, we have five, so there is an inability of the municipalities to enforce the code because they don't have resources. And on top of that, you know, these changes to the toolkit really do not address the fundamental problem in terms of how do you distribute the resources. You know, can the taxpayers sustain this onslaught that the toolkit is kind of at the periphery of the problem? You know, resources have to be sent to the localities because you're going to see now people abandoning the property. You know, when you are dealing with a house, a one-family house that on the average is going to pay $10,000, and, you know, there's no services, a lot of people have to make the choice, not only sometimes whether to pay the mortgage and pay the property taxes, but do I improve my house or pay the property taxes?
Right. And that's part of the heartbreaking paradox of the whole thing. But, Billy, are you on the one hand asking government to do less because they have to and to do more to bail out the town?
Well, they have to do both. It's a paradox, like you say. But, you know, it's the tool. The approach is not dealing, it's not going to ameliorate the crisis that is really about to explode, because as the properties are sitting there, whether they're foreclosures or those properties that people can no longer maintain, and the municipalities are not providing the services, you're going to see an erosion of the neighborhood. And you could see what happened back in the 60s as they rise in the inner cities, where people just simply abandoned their property.
Billy, thank you so much, Bob.
This is exactly right. The phenomenon he's talking about, we've reported on this. I went in Patterson and saw a situation where what was happening is people are abandoning these properties. They're usually rental properties, and these are good housing stock, solid housing stock, 3-4 family units, and people are leaving them. And then what happens is individuals come in and strip out the physical infrastructure, the metal, whatever they can get out of it, and sell it. And you are starting to see that happen in New Jersey. What needs to happen in that situation, and some of the progressive communities are doing it, you must make the banks responsible for these in a proactive way. You can't let banks walk away from their obligation of maintaining the property. And that comes from a granular focus on block conditions. And it is true that, I mean, one of the things that you might think about doing in this situation is actually identifying zip codes where this is happening, and then have the state and counties provide special resources to do this block by block, if you will, kind of triage. Because he's exactly right. What's going to happen is the rateable base deteriorates for everybody. So people that are holding on find that the value of their property declines through no fault of their own.
Billy, again, thank you for calling up with an important call. And Phil in Somerville, you're on WNYC. Hi, Phil.
Hi, Brian. Love your show.
Thank you.
I hate to be totally negative, but no matter what toolkit is put in place, I think the taxes are going to go up. We just went through a whole process of having our houses reevaluated to fair market value. So my assessed valuation went up $80,000. So they can probably at some point tell me I'm getting a tax cut, but because the value, you know, by unit cost, but by the time, you know, they figure in the new evaluation, I'm going to get a raise in property tax. I've really come to the conclusion the only way to get a property tax cut is to get out of New Jersey.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people, hence we're losing actually a seat in Congress because of that, what you described. The other thing here is that was their attempt to stay ahead of the massive number of tax appeals that people rationally are pursuing. Because if you have a foreclosure in your neighborhood and the sale goes through much below what this town says it's worth, you would be a fool not to take the town to tax appeal.
Yeah, I don't know how that whole thing works, because, like I said, my evaluation, my assessed valuation was like $80,000 less than what they say is the fair market value, which I don't even know if it's right, because not that many people selling. But I do know there are people selling just because they're worried about that reevaluation and how much it's going to cost them.
Phil, thank you. Now, people may not understand that. I don't understand that, because the property values are going down right now. When they reassess the property, why doesn't it come out lower than it did before, and therefore property taxes go down?
Because first of all, we have 566 towns all stumbling through this, and it depends where their rate of evaluation was to begin with. Some towns sleep on this process and don't go about doing it. Many of them set it in motion to stay ahead of the tax appeal. So I'd have to know exactly where his town was.
Was there a lot of revaluing of the property, reassessment going on during the bubble, and increasing of property taxes as a result?
Well, it was kind of everybody was happy, because as long as we all had the same Kool-Aid, no one was really concerned, because the property values kept going up, and so the revenues kept going up, and no one challenged any of the underlying assumptions. Now that we see in many communities property values declining, it's calling into question the whole architecture.
We're talking about Governor Christie's toolkit to help local governments keep property taxes down and get rid of debt. And JW in Newark, you're on WNYC. Hi, JW.
Hi. The biggest tool in the toolkit has been ignored, and that is the need to address tax policy in New Jersey. the rich have been getting away with murder and for a very long time. If you go back to Christine Whitman's era, when she cut the taxes with the help of the Democrats, she cut the taxes and then had to pay for the expenses with more debt. So
right.
New Jersey is carrying
right.
an incredible amount of debt that we all have to pay for. And so they then began to finagle by keeping money away from the pension system, and the process has been leading New Jersey to the down road ever since. So really what should be done is to reimpose the millionaire's tax, because too many things get paid for by property tax in New Jersey, more so than in a lot of other states. Why? Because we keep the rich insulated. New Jersey is one of the richest states, if not the richest state in the union. We shouldn't be going through this.
There's a couple of points. One is Newark is particularly in a challenge here because 70% of your land isn't even eligible for property tax because you're like a capital city like Washington, D.C. because of all the state, federal, and nonprofit buildings. So you all have to try to make, and meanwhile, you have hundreds of thousands of people come in and use the benefits of Newark and need emergency services, but there's no way for the city to get revenue off of that. That's one point. The second point is that what's happening now is that we see Governor Christie and even the Democrats look at the policy that's happening in Washington now with President Obama and the Republican compromise. They're all afraid if they tax the rich that the rich will leave. So we have a situation now, right now, where capital is so mobile, there's this concern by people that are in these positions that if they make it inhospitable for the rich, that the money will leave.
And J.W., thank you for your call. Even though that is off the table, that
right.
is something that a lot of people still say.
His historical analysis is spot on, though, in terms of the chronology of what happened. He's right.
Before you go, why is Governor Cuomo, incoming governor of New York, obviously, so interested in what's going on in New Jersey, and has he reacted to it?
I have not heard any comment on this latest iteration with the arbitration, but throughout his campaign, many of the lines, since I covered the Christie campaign, were very similar and resonated with the Christie campaign. So Christie and the Democratic leadership in New Jersey and Trenton's about a year ahead in terms of making this commitment. So they're going to have to see how it actually plays out. So in essence, they have a chance of having an opportunity to look at how it does work out.
Two other things real quick. In your blog, Stuck Nation, on our politics website, It's a Free Country, you wrote this week about how U.S. companies are stashing away nearly $1 trillion of cash. That's a lot of money. Why are they hoarding cash, and how is it affecting our wider recovery and the financial crises that the states are facing?
Well, the problem is that we have capital likes a sure bet, don't we all? Number one, we have a situation where the health care reform hasn't taken effect yet, so we don't know. We see the courts challenging it in a substantial way. How can you make macro planning if you're a business in terms of investment? We're redoing the financial regs, which is like, you know, redoing the plumbing in your house. They don't really know what's going to happen there. And then third, we have this kick the can down the road, this bipartisan thing that's going on in Washington regarding tax policy that's only good for 2 years. So listen, you know, I got $500 billion in the Cayman Islands, I'll keep it there until they figure out what exactly America is doing.
2 years is a long time for money to sit on the sidelines. They could hire people for 2 years and then fire them again if they have to.
Bring back bartering.
And you have agreed to join the Brian Lehrer Show guests gift list. So, Bob Henley, what are you giving this year?
I would a gift certificate to the Morris County food kitchen, food pantry that takes care of the homeless. It's a great organization, and I just think that that would be a great investment because the need is quite significant this year.
All right. That's great. WNYC's Bob Henley, thanks a lot. And on that gift guide, remember, listeners, you can visit our gift guide. It is almost complete now. We've been doing this for weeks with about a guest a day. It's the Brian Lehrer Show guests gift list for the holidays at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. And I'll be back in a minute.